Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 234 of the Fun with Cars Motorsport Miscellany, a brief rundown of the motorsports we care about. I'm Robin Warner. It is Sunday afternoon Eastern Time on the 20th of May. I want to start with a brief look at the upcoming racing schedule. In Formula One, it's the sixth round at the Monaco GP on the 27th of May 2018. IndyCar, it's the sixth round, the Indianapolis 500, also on the 27th of May. In the World Endurance Championship, their next round is the second. That's at Le Mans, 24 hours of Le Mans, that's the 16th of June. And IMSA, the next race, their fifth round will be Detroit at the Detroit Grand Prix on the 2nd of June. Three out of four of those are very big marquee events. IMSA already had their marquee events, which was the Daytona 24-hour and the Sebring 12-hour. Anyway, today is a special episode, as I am sharing an interview I recently recorded with Freddie Hunt. Freddie is 1976 F1 Drivers World Champion James Hunt's son. Not long ago, Freddie's manager Adam reached out to me and asked if I'd be interested to chat. Of course, I was, so we arranged it. I also want to say that I worked with podcast co-founder Jim Lau on a clever way to record Freddie Hunt, but despite testing the system, I couldn't get it to work in the heat of the moment. So please accept my apologies for the less than stellar audio quality. But without further ado, here's the interview. I appreciate very much that Adam got in touch with me, and I'm very happy to talk with you. It sounds like you have a lot of interesting things going on in your own life because you've got your own racing career. You've also got the 25th anniversary of your father, which is, of course, always worth discussing.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, racing this year, we teamed up with Havilland, Texaco Havilland last year, which is a motor engine oil lubricant. And we had a great success in Texas at the end of last season, winning the race, the Coast 24 Hours. So they've decided they want to do some more work with me, so we're doing this season. We were hoping to do the Imola 12-hour this month, but I think there was a hiccup somewhere along the line, so the team said we'll go for the next round. Can't remember off the top of my head which one that is. But then we are also definitely doing the Barcelona 24-hour and the Spa 12-hour.
Oh, wow.
Barcelona I have driven before, so that's good. It's a nice track. It's fine. Spa I haven't yet, and I'm very, very excited to drive that. As you can imagine, it's one of the most iconic tracks out there. So very excited to be doing 12 hours of racing around there in a car that I know well, and I like the car. It feels good, so I'm pretty confident. So no one out there that's too damn quick.
Is the car that you're referring to, is that Cayman GT4 car?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's a Porsche Cayman GT4. It's a great, great little car. Very simple to drive, very forgiving, but obviously you've still got to be on point to get a quick lap in. But it's a very forgiving car, a very comfortable car to drive, which is nice.
I've driven the road-going version of that car and couldn't believe how easy that one was to drive. Of course, we had some track time. Obviously, the race car will be quicker reacting and more dialed in than that, but fundamentally, I can absolutely agree with you that car was remarkably forgiving and easy to drive.
Oh, good. I'm glad you said that. I've got very little experience with Porsches, but I've heard from a lot of people that Cayman chassis is a hell of a good chassis, and just makes everything very easy.
So how did it come about that you decided to go the endurance racing track? I know that you started in Formula Fords a while ago back and bounced around a little bit, but more recently you've been getting into sports cars and seems like you've quite liked it. What do you think is about the sports cars that connects with you?
To be honest, I'm not really sure. I mean, apart from the long distance driving, it suits my mentality better. I can relax more and get into a groove better. You're not trying to, there's no pressure to smash out purple laps, qualifying pace every single lap. So I can, for my own mindset, it's easier for me that way. But driving the cars, I'm not really sure. I do seem to be, slightly faster relatively in a sports car than a single seater. I'm not sure. Apart from the Formula Ford, when I do get in a Formula Ford, I'm very comfortable in them. But I don't know, perhaps the large amount of downforce doesn't suit me. What I think it is actually, because in a carbon fiber chassis, on a single seater, it's so rigid. You've got such little room for error, and it's all happening so fast. And actually, the difference between a slow lap and a fast lap is very, very marginal in what you're doing with the car. People say these modern Formula One cars, they must be so easy to drive. I can assure you they are definitely not easy to drive. Well, to drive fast, you know, consistently, very fast.
Certainly, certainly. Well, I feel like to drive a modern Formula One car, you need your master's in electrical engineering just to be able to figure out all the dials and switches and all the bits that are going on, things to adjust.
I'd be terrified if someone offered me a drive in one of them. I'd think I'd break it before I even got out.
Yeah, I'd be worried about, oh, maybe I blew a fuse. Something's not working.
Yeah, I struggled to operate an iPhone. Don't know.
Yeah, it's just maybe duct tape 10 iPhones together and practice that, and then you'll be good.
Also, I mean, the switch from single seats to sports cars was kind of natural. As you know, I had a bit of a break for 2 or 3 years, and that's when I came back and thought, well, you know, I'm too old to go to Formula One. The only point of staying in single-seaters would be with the ambition to go to Formula One, and by which time I was growing old enough and wise enough to realise that it just wasn't going to happen. Even if I did have all the funding behind me, millions and millions and millions, it still would have been a tall order. So I thought, well, let's call the Formula One ambition a day and focus on something else, which the next obvious thing is Le Mans.
You know, it's interesting. I interviewed Juan Pablo Montoya a few months ago and asked him about Formula One, you know, because he's doing endurance racing here in the States right now, IMSA, so Daytona 24-hour, Sebring 12-hour, and some other shorter races. And when I mentioned Formula One, he immediately brushed it off and said, you know, it's way too political. He seems to just be a much happier driver outside of Formula One, which is ironic in many ways. But I do think there's a lot of truth to that.
Well, absolutely. Since particularly in the last, 3 or 4 years, I suppose, it's super anal. They're basically not allowed to race anymore. So I'm very glad I stopped chasing the Formula One goal when I did. And, you know, didn't make it all the way up to GP2 or wherever, but then to realise, actually, I don't want to do it because it's a load of rubbish. I'm sorry. It is a load of rubbish now. I don't even bother watching it anymore. You know, I'll watch it. If I've got nothing better to do, I'll watch it. But before, I used to think, oh, right, that Sunday Grand Prix is on, so I'll be at home in front of the TV. But now I'll only stick it on if I happen to be at home in front of the TV.
Well, so you've moved on, you've gotten into sports cars, and seems like you've been enjoying yourself and been quite successful. There's been this talk of the goal getting to the 24 hours of Le Mans. Are you still targeting that for this year?
No, not for this year. It's unrealistic, I'm afraid.
Yes.
We just don't have the money. I mean, if we had the money, then we could go ahead and do it. I still haven't properly raced a GT3 car. I've done one short race, which we had mechanical issues, and we did about an hour and a half. So I need to do, ideally, at least a few races in a modern GT3 car for tackling Le Mans. So, I mean, the plan is for this season to do well enough in the GT4 to keep attracting sponsors. So hopefully then next year we can have enough money to go GT3 racing, because the price difference between GT4 and GT3 is enormous.
Sure, yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah, absolutely. And I listened to an earlier interview that you did, and you talked about eventually wanting to step into prototypes. What is your, I feel like a business professor now, what is your 5-year plan? how do you see yourself going from the GT4, the GT3 to the prototype?
Oh, I don't know. The best plan, there is no plan. Well, I just take it as it comes. I mean, I mean that I don't really like making long plans, because they never turn out the way one wants them to. So, like I said, this year, drive as well as I can. And, you know, if I do well, then we'll hopefully attract some more sponsors. And next year, move up to GT3. And that might be Le Mans next year. You know, but you never know what's going to happen around the corner.
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, I think your point is incredibly valid, especially when thinking about the World Endurance Championship itself. Just last year, Porsche decided to pull out, meaning there's only one leading LMP1 car. And then they came up with this bizarre super season kind of thing that they're doing now, which just began last weekend at Spa, carries through the winter, and then ends, I think, next year at Le Mans. So it's a really squirrely setup that even the World Endurance Championship is putting together. So, yeah, everything changes really fast these days.
Yeah, it's such a shame about the LMP1s. It really is. It's horrible. The prototypes I would love to drive. The extreme speed of downforce going through a corner and the late raking that downforce can offer, which a GT car, it had downforce, yes, but nothing like a single seater or a prototype. It's incredible. And that's a real hardcore racing car, and that's why I want to drive them, because because they're faster.
Yeah.
I think probably safer as well. I don't feel nearly as safe in a GT car as I did in the single seater. I had complete 100% faith in the single seater. As long as nothing hit me on the head, I was going to be all right. Whereas in the GT car, sometimes I'm going around and I look at catch a wall out of the corner of my eye and I think, Christ, if I hit that at speed, I'm going to be in big trouble. And the car just doesn't feel as structurally sound as the single seater. In the single seater, you're in a little sort of a bullet, little cocoon monocoque, which is virtually indestructible. Whereas, you have a big impact in a GT car and the whole thing can crumple.
Yeah, no, absolutely right. And, there's a whole, you have to dissipate energy somehow. And when you're in a prototype and certainly in a single-seater car, I mean, you're quite literally in the center of it. And so you have that much more space for things to break and fall off and take the energy before it gets to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. To that end, would you ever consider Formula E racing?
Yeah, I'd certainly consider it, but I'd need more experience. I know I'm not that experienced racing driver in comparison to those guys. And then right now, if I got into a Formula E car without real substantial testing, I'd get eaten alive. So it's a bit out of my league at the moment, if I'm honest. But I certainly would like to if I had the sufficient training.
That's fascinating. What's interesting about that is it is, a carbon monocoque chassis. It is a form of the car in general, but it's not terribly high downforce or even that high of grip levels, especially when compared to a Formula One car.
No, exactly. Absolutely. There is another thing that bothers me about it, but I know why they've done it. It's all street racing. And personally, I've never liked street tracks.
Yeah, of course.
I like runoff, you see.
Yeah, understood.
I like a bit of room for error, so if you do hang the back out, you're not going to smash your rear wheels.
Well, I do see, evolution in the sport. Obviously, Formula One itself has gone hybrid. I do see there being a crossover point where Formula E does try to get to some of the traditional tracks. But that, as you say, is in the future, and we can worry about that when it comes to us. You're going to be doing some GT4 racing. That is quite exciting. I mean, it sounds like you get to go to some of the legendary tracks that are across Europe. Do you have something that you're looking forward to in particular, like a particular track or event?
Definitely Spa. Yeah, I can't wait to drive there. I mean, every time I'm on the PlayStation with friends and they say, what track? It's one of my favorite circuits. But I've never been there yet, so I'm really excited.
I agree with you. I have lots of laps of experience on it on PlayStation, on Gran Turismo. And I'll tell you, I'm not even worried about runoff in those conditions, I have to say. In the real world, I think I would be quite happy to see some runoff. I mean, those are some obviously fantastic combination of corners, but some real high-speed bits as part of that track.
Absolutely, yeah. Over the years, there's been some spectacular jumps there. Hopefully that's not going to be me. But I think Eau Rouge, the second, which is turn 2 and 3, I imagine an arc will be flat, so that shouldn't be too difficult. And then the next corners, that when you've got the right and the left, that's not too much of an issue. Unless you do something really stupid, you shouldn't go off there. Which, that's a famous last word, so they're probably going to have a crowd. I think I got most of the track down to the tee. The ending, that really fast left, I don't know what our Porsche would be like on that, whether that be flat or a lift or a downshift, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, those are the ballsy corners, right? Where you really just gotta suck it up and trust the car and all that kind of fun stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing, I don't know how many cars are going to be on track as well, because, Texas was my first night race.
Was that Circuit of the Americas?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's difficult because you have the lights in your rearview mirror, but it's very difficult to judge the speed of them. And so we weren't the fastest cars nor the slowest cars, so we had to avoid slower cars, overtake them safely and without trying to lose too much lap time. And then also, but keep out of the way of the faster cars. And at night, when you've got their high beams in your mirror, and it's not like a road car, you've got very little vision out of it. And so it can make it quite tricky.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Oh, I got a feeling Spa might be a lot more cars and no floodlight. I don't think there's any floodlighting at all.
Jeez, yeah. There'll be, I think, plenty of campfires along the interior of viewers watching, but...
Good, extra markers.
That's right. Yeah, so I have to ask, did you have any Breakfast of Champions this morning?
Not this morning, no. No, I had a quiet night last night.
Oh, okay. But the reason I ask, it's, you know, one of the most iconic things about your dad, you know, he had this, like, freewheeling spirit that you couldn't do anything but be jealous of. Like, how has he managed that? And I noticed on several pictures, you had that same badge on your driving suit, the Sex Breakfast of Champions badge.
It's a great start of the day, isn't it?
Well, it's never been a bad day afterwards. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, exactly.
But where is that line? Like, you know, how much do you embracing your father's identity and how much of it is striking out on your own?
Well, I never tried to be more or less like him at all. I just be myself. Personally, I think I'm more like my mother, really. You know, I'm very proud of the way of who he was and how he behaved. I thought it was great. You know, he's a complete nonconformist, and I don't believe in conforming. I think it's an absolute waste of time. I mean, there's no reason why one should. Why should we do what everyone else is doing? You know, I'll do it my way. I'll make up my own conclusions about various things, and I'll do what I think is right. I think we naturally share a similar attitude. As long as you're not obsessing anyone. You know, you're doing what you think is right and wrong. But, I mean, at the end of the day, who is to say who is right and wrong? We all have our own individual little realities. You know, and no one actually knows who's right and wrong.
Sure.
And we'll find out that on D-Day, you know, when we meet the big man upstairs. If he's even there, we don't know what's going to happen.
Right, sure. And to that end, considering that being yourself, being a part of building your own identity and seeing parts of your dad relate to, and you're like, actually, I'm more like my mother. What is it like speaking to these other titans in the racing industry about your father?
Fine. It's all right. It can be emotional sometimes. You know, sometimes they talk about dad in such a, normally when they're talking about it in such a lovely way. I've never heard one of them say a bad word against dad. I mean, significantly bad word. These, you know, Caldwell says he was fundamentally lazy, and I believe that. But so what? it's normally all praise. And when I hear a new praise, you know, get me emotional. Or if I'm hungover and feeling emotional anyway.
Yeah. Well, you recently chatted with Bernie Ecclestone, Lord Hesketh, and Murray Walker, and in many ways, they knew your father for a longer duration of time than you.
Absolutely. I mean, I only knew my father for just under 6 years, and I was barely even conscious for that, you know.
Yeah, of course.
I was a baby. So, yeah, they knew, you know, Bernie, and Bernie Alexander would have met Dad slightly before Caldwell. Although Caldwell would have met him. Bernie and Dad would have known each other from early 70s, maybe even late 60s.
Sure.
And Hesketh, I think it was 70, I think 71 they met, yeah. 70, yeah, because in 72 they were in F3 together, yeah.
So...
they were a long old time.
What's it been like? Like, have there been particular stories that surprised you, or there were particular stories that you really came away feeling much more positive about? Like, what were standouts from those talks?
I don't know, really. No, nothing. I can't say anything stood out. To be honest, I mean, I never really hear much. I rarely hear new things about Dad now, unless it's from a person I've never met before.
Mm.
Normally, a member of the public who tells me a lovely little story of how they met my father at a golf club or something like that. You know, I heard a story the other day how they, you know, his car, she was trying to leave the golf club and the car broke down, and Dad came out and said, well, I don't know how to fix it, but Dad called a mechanic and then bought her a cup of tea until the mechanic came. And there's a lot, nice little stories like that. Those are the real touching ones.
Mm.
Because of all the other guys that I interview, you know, the Bernie X and the Hesketh and et cetera, I generally hear the same sort of stuff said in a different way.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, you're moving forward in your life and you're learning about yourself. Is there anything, do you have any particular interest in, like, this is how you want people to remember your father? Going forward from that, this is how you want people to remember you.
I haven't got as far as thinking about how I want to be remembered.
No, not past tense. I mean, like, come no, away, Dad, like, I'm, what are you like? Who are you? Who is Freddie as the individual? I didn't mean past tense.
I want people to remember Dad for the way he was, not for the way he was portrayed in the movie. if that's a simple enough answer.
No, it's fair.
Because people who just watch the movie, although albeit a good movie, I'm not slating the movie, I just don't think Mr. Hemsworth quite captured my father's character. I think he came across a little bit cocky and a little bit bold, a little bit daft as well. Mm. And Dad wasn't that. Dad was, although he was exciting and fun and some would argue reckless, which I would disagree with, but he was very calculated and very honest and very humble and very lovable, which I don't think Hemsworth quite grasped. So if anyone listening, if they haven't seen any real interviews with Dad or documentary, but they think they like James Hunt because of the movie, then watch the real James Hunt in documentaries and you can really see what he's like. He's 10 times better than how he came out in the movie.
Well, you know, it's fascinating because to that end, well, just briefly, Daniel Brühl, who played Niki Lauda, had the advantage of, he had Niki Lauda right there saying, no, I am that way. No, I'm not that way. And,
he asked to spend time with Niki so he could learn him. Now, Hemsworth didn't even bother to contact the family.
Mm, yeah.
So you see the difference in the professionalism there.
Well, and I think, Chris Hemsworth really just wanted to capture the imagination of your father, the stereotypical illusion of what your father was, and he kind of just made it a little bit of a caricature. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I did suspect that was sort of possibly the plan, but I still don't agree with it.
Yeah, oh, fair. Well, here's what I did. So I watched the movie Rush, and as you said, I enjoyed it. I think it was a good movie overall, quite a bit. But then there was a documentary that was made roughly around the same time. It was narrated by Michael Fassbender, and it was this documentary called One, and it covered a big swath of Formula One history, and there was a heavy-handed look at the Lauda-Hunt era, your father's era, and there are a lot of actual interviews in that documentary, and just as you said, listening to James Hunt's actual interviews, I was like, oh man, this was a lot better. So completely agree with you that it's pretty common among movies, right? It's like you watch the movie, it's okay. Oh, but the book's much better. And the book that it's based on and, the person that the movie's based on is actually much better.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, well, thank you for saying that.
Cheers, yeah. But you yourself, you're moving forward. You're now 30, is that correct?
Yep, unfortunately, 31 next month. Can you believe it? Crikey.
Well, as someone that's approaching 39, yeah, I can believe it and have very little sympathy for you.
11 months is just shot by.
As you get older, I have a son now, and as you get older, the periods of time just mean less and less, so they tend to go by faster in your mind. But really, everything's going at the same pace as it always has done.
Yeah, perhaps we need to tell ourselves to sort of slow down, take our time a bit more, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, as hard as it is to do, you got to try at least, right? Mm. But, so going forward, you plan to just keep racing and doing the best you can and building from there, is that it?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly that. Yeah, the conservation, I want to do more and more and more, basically, of that. So gradually phase out of racing when I feel I've achieved enough. Or I failed, one of the two. And I've been more into full-time conservation and environmental work. That's the idea.
Oh, that's noble. I mean, to try and fail is always vastly superior than never trying at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the main reason I started. Well, not the main reason, but it was a big thought process when I was making the decision to start racing or not. And I thought, well, if I've got this opportunity now and if I don't take it, I'll be living with myself for the rest of my life for not giving it a try.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, what's the best way to follow your progress going forward? What's the best way for people to keep an eye on what you're up to?
Well, unfortunately, the baby categories I race in aren't really properly televised, so it's got to be social media. We try and get out as much as possible as we can on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, so that's really the best way. Hearing any announcements, as soon as we've got the next race confirmed, if you're waiting for the team to come back and tell them which one they want to do, then that will be posted on the social media platforms, and you can see that.
Okay, well, fantastic. And also, always feel free to shoot me any kind of communication and we can give people progress updates on what you're up to. And this was just a lovely conversation. If you ever want to chat again, I would be more than happy to do it.
Okay, no, that's great. Yeah, yeah, thank you. Well, we certainly can. You know, perhaps later on the season, once I've done a couple of races, we can reconvene and see how we're getting on.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, Freddie, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I really enjoyed chatting with Freddie Hunt and am quite interested to see what he can achieve in the endurance racing world in the future. And hopefully we'll get to hear about it from time to time. And I also really hope that you guys enjoyed the interview. I also want to thank you for listening. Please take a moment to review us on iTunes or on whatever platform you get our podcast. Please leave comments on the episode of your choice by going to funwithcars.com. As always, I can be reached at feedback@funwithcars.com. Tweet us at fun_with_cars. And check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/FWCars. I'm Robin Warner. Goodbye.
Okay, so I am recording you and myself. I'm talking to you on my laptop, and I'm recording you from my iPhone. So what could go wrong?
Yeah.
So time's a wasting.